Inspiring solutions to save America, one show at a time. Are you ready to get on board?
When are you guys gonna learn? The more you indict, the more we unite. Facts. It's Trump 2024. We don't care. You heard me? We already made our mind up. You already know when the hood got your back. Man, they deep in the hood, gangsters. Hollin' about Trump 2024, you heard me? Woo woo! Wah! Gangster! The hood got this man back. I'm just trying to tell you. You heard me? And we ain't stupid, man, American people, man. We ain't all them talking about lockdowns and back when the masks and all that. You know, they got a new virus coming and it's gonna be, man, nobody don't care. Ain't fooling nobody no more with none of that. You know, new jack, man, nobody being fooled no more. We all the way up, you heard me? It's Trump 2024. That's what it's gonna be, cause we ain't having nothing else.
From sea to shining sea, 3 hours of bold truth and excellence. The Wendy Bell Radio Program.
Welcome back. Hour number three of the Wendy Bell Radio Program on the clock, and we begin with breaking news.
Wendy Bell, breaking news.
It sounds so stupid when we do that because so much breaking news is ridiculous, but this is big. This from thehill.com. Judge tosses some Trump Georgia charges in election interference case. So he's not totally off the hook, which he shouldn't have ever been on a hook, but this is very interesting, and it begs us to ask a lot of questions about the fate of Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade, you know. Oh, yeah. Judge dismissed some of the former president's charges Wednesday in the sweeping election interference case against him due to a lack of detail. Judge Scott, lack of detail means... your evidence sucks. Your case is weak. You've put out these terrible prosecutors who are George Soros' dark money-funded wackos who are Trump deranged. That's what I'm going to read into this. Judge Scott McAfee tossing six charges contained in the indictment, including three of Trump's counts, but his ruling does not impact the racketeer in the RICO charge that serves as the foundation of the historic prosecution. Now, McAfee's ruling is not linked to the judge's examination of Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis's relationship with the special prosecutor, which he is also expected to rule on this week. Each of the tossed charges related to alleged efforts by Trump and some of his co-defendants, including former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani and White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, to solicit Georgia officials to violate their oaths of office. Lack of evidence. Didn't happen. That's not what they were doing. They were asking Brad Raffensperger and Brian Kemp, hey, guys. Especially Raffensperger as the Secretary of State in charge of all of the elections. We've heard some stories about some sideways jazz going on. Some problems with your voting machine. Some problems with the precincts. Have you guys looked into it? Raffensperger lies. And says, oh, yeah, we've audited. Yeah, we've checked and we got nothing. There's no proof of any shenanigans. Yeah, on election day. So weird. Well, actually, he did not audit any of the counties or any of the machines. So that's where you get the lack of proof, lack of evidence in the case. The judge ruled that while the charges do contain the essential elements of each crime, right? They failed to provide enough detail for the defendants to mount their defenses. Under the current charges, McAfee says, the defendants could have violated the law in dozens, if not hundreds, of distinct ways. Isn't that exactly the strategy of this Department of Justice, though, and the legal machinations under the Democratic Party? we're going to bog you down. We're going to throw everything we can at you. We're going to go through the law books and we're going to get every freaking possible violation. Some will stick, some won't. But by the time you have to launch your defense, find somebody to help you out with it, you're going to be broke. Now, Donald Trump, obviously, with the deep pockets, but this is what they flung at the January 6 hostages. You see the laundry list of charges these people have been accused of? Well, you're going to hear from Jake Lang. He's a January 6 hostage, a defendant, who's been in prison coming up, will celebrate his fourth birthday in a row behind bars, and still has not had his case go to trial. So all of this fits neatly in this disgusting two-tier system of justice. And if there are multiple ways that you can be judged, that you can be accused, that your case can be adjudicated, and that you can be punished, then you don't have justice. You have gamesmanship. You have political games. The judge ruled that while the charges do contain the essential elements, he says, they failed to provide enough detail for the defendants to even defend themselves. Well, I don't even know what that means. What does that mean? What kind of evidence do you have that suggests I did that, or I said that, or I caused that, or that happened? This McAfee guy saying the defendants can't even defend themselves because your allegations aren't even sustainable. That's damning. The judge wrote that even if the statute of limitations expires, the state will receive a 6-month extension from today to resubmit its case to a grand jury. Well, this kind of throws a wrench in the plan. Let's see, 6 months from today, March to September, a couple months before the election. Resubmit to the grand jury. He also said prosecutors could request to a certificate allowing them to appeal, which he would likely grant because of a lack of precedent. This has never happened before because we've never experienced such a monster cheat before. And I'm not just talking about elections. I'm talking about everything. Donald Trump was not supposed to win. Donald Trump was not supposed to slow down the flow of suck. They were rolling. They had plans. They had people they wanted to put in place. They've all gotten rich. I mean, shoot. If you can be a literal vegetable as president of the United States and pretend that you're going to write a book and you're going to get an $8 million advance on it, can you imagine if you have some sort of mental acuity left in you and you're a member of Congress? Sky's the limit on how much you can insider trade and enrich yourself, right? That's why you need a $7 trillion budget. It's a lot of palms to grease. It's a lot of people to pay off. It's a lot of voices to silence, after all. Ew! Now, I just might be naive, and I'll take that. But this is blowing up in everybody's face. And again, I'm going to go back to my opening monologue. We do not live where the best and the brightest are the ones shaping policy. We do not live where those who think outside the box, who are entrepreneurial and dreamers, the kind that we like, are in charge or are elected. We live in an environment now ruined by this woke BS that was crap from go. Everybody knew it. That Barack Obama helped Greece with his great transformation of these United States and his apology tour around the world, for which he won a Nobel Prize, if you can freaking even wrap your mind around that. This is by design, and it's blowing up. And for the unraveling to continue, you must be engaged. You must think critically by all of this stuff. That's why I want to present to you both sides. I want you to hear the article I just read to you about the judge in this case throwing out multiple charges, three of them against Donald Trump, is from a liberal website, thehill.com. Do your due diligence. Now, I do, I've gone too long in this, but here's what I'm going to surmise is going to happen. There's going to be a domino effect. And the domino effect is going to be the unraveling of these cases. The point that they needed to make was that Donald Trump did something wrong, that he was indicted four times, that he was slapped with 91 criminal charges. The strength of the case is irrelevant. Even the outcome of the case is irrelevant. It's about the optics. That is why Fannie Willis had to scramble in her case. If I'm not mistaken, it was her case, where they convened the grand jury and they voted at like a 10 o'clock on a Monday night and pushed it through because they needed a victory against Donald Trump. It's all calculated. It is premeditated. And that should make you ill. Because you are forgotten along the way. And you deserve better. Beyond that, your children deserve better. So I want to talk about this, and I teaser-beezered this before the last break, and I went long here, I apologize, but I want to talk about lying under oath. Because if people can lie under oath without penalty, then what value is the oath? Cassidy Hutchinson, a star witness for the January 6th subcommittee, is in the crosshairs now. We've talked about her. And I'm gonna double down on this next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. I say this all the time as a mom on this program, because I am, and it's very difficult to try to teach your children rules and norms and morals and values when the people in the spotlight in our country break them. I mean, if Tony Fauci is allowed to lie under oath repeatedly to Rand Paul, "Excuse me, Senator, but you don't know what you were talking about." It sounds more like Bernie. I'm sorry. The two men kind of mix and morph in my mind, and I do what I do. If he's allowed to lie, I mean, what are we doing the whole thing for? Put your hand on the Bible and repeat after me. "I do solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help me God." If that's just throwaway, then you live in anarchy. You live in madness. You live in Haiti right now. New York Times has this story. Testimony fleshes out account of Trump's demand to go to the Capitol on January 6th. What it should have said is, testimony shows Cassidy Hutchinson's a rat fink liar who said Trump lunged for the wheel of his presidential limo even though he did not. This is their strategy, right? We're going to throw outlandish things out there. And then when people are like, "Wait, what? Prove it." We're going to destroy the evidence. "Oh my God, I can't find that. Wait, where did it go? I have no idea." Like wipe it with a cloth? What? I don't know what you're talking about. It's so insulting to your intelligence. A newly released transcript of an interview of the Secret Service agent who drove Donald Trump's vehicle that day disputes that he tried to grab the steering wheel or lunged at another agent. Remember, he was deranged. He was a maniac. He was a madman. He wanted to go to the Capitol. Yeah. Really? Have you ever seen anything than kind of brick wall Donald Trump? He can be slapped with an indictment and he can be arrested and arraigned, his mugshot taken. Or he could win the Powerball and become president of the United States. And he's the same dude, uber even keel. And so when those of us who think critically, we're like, prove it. Well, that's when Cassidy Hutchinson went back and she changed her testimony. She quote unquote amended it. Why do we use these words? No, she lied. She lied. She went back and changed factual things that she said before the January 6th committee, who then deleted her video recorded deposition, if you will. Poof. and 2 terabytes of email data from their investigation. Yeah, I don't think we needed it anymore, said Benny Johnson. Can we not do better? Do we not deserve better? Do we demand better? Yeah. President Donald J. Trump. And by the way, why is the New York Times only like figuring this out now? Pal, it's been 3 years. President Donald Trump had just delivered his fiery speech at the Ellipse early in the afternoon, January 6th, setting in motion the attack by his supporters on the Capitol. First of all, you suck. It's not at all what happened. When he got into his armored vehicle after the speech, Mr. Trump immediately brought up a topic he often broached after his public appearance. How big was the crowd? Oh, sounds like he's got a big ego. You suck even worse, New York Times. But within 30 seconds, his conversation with his lead Secret Service agent took a more contentious turn. According to a transcript released Monday of an interview by House investigators of another Secret Service agent who was driving the car, Mr. Trump wanted to go to the Capitol, but the lead agent, Robert Engel, said no, telling him there was no plan in place. The president was insisted on going, recounted the driver, whose name was not disclosed. It was clear to me he wanted to go to the Capitol. He was not screaming at Mr. Engel. He was not screaming at me. Certainly his voice was raised, but it did not seem to me that he was irate. Certainly not. Certainly didn't seem as irritated or as agitated as he had been on the way to the Ellipse. But the driver said Mr. Trump never lunged for the steering wheel or physically accosted the agents, contradicting one of the most sensational and hotly disputed elements of testimony given to the House January 6th committee by a White House aide. That was Mark Meadows, Chief of Staff, Cassidy Hutchinson. And she said, he lunged. I saw it. He was a crazy lunatic. How did she get paid for making that up? Same way Joe Biden's getting paid. Here's your New York Times best-selling author status. Don't doubt me. This is the way they do it. Do you think anybody knows who Cassidy Hutchinson is? Do you think anybody would read her stupid book all about January 6th? You want to get it beaten in your head more? You want to litigate it another time? You want to go over it? You want to beat that pinata? The Tootsie Rolls are gone, yo. There's nothing left. This is how it works. Now, if Cassidy Hutchinson does not get brought up on freaking charges of lying under oath, there's a word for that. It's called perjury. If Anthony Fauci can get away with it. But Donald Trump can be arrested and arraigned and charged and indicted and dragged through the mud and all these silly charges hurled at him just so they hope on a prayer that it makes you dislike him. Huh. Tain't working. Jake Lang, January 6th prisoner, in prison, going on 4 years. We talk to him from his cell next. Welcome back to the Wendy Bell Radio program, my friends. About this time yesterday, I had the great pleasure of speaking with a January 6th defendant, a hostage, if you will, who's been in prison going on 4 years. His name is Jake Lang, and here is that interview now. I've got Jake Lang with me. Jake, how are you? Where are you? Tell me what's up.
Hey, Wendy, God bless you. I'm hanging tough. God's grace is here in Brooklyn Federal Prison, one of the notoriously harshest prisons in all of America. My 15th prison on the merry-go-round that this corrupt Department of Justice has me on. But we're here and we're holding the ground.
How long have you been in prison, Jake?
It'll be my fourth birthday coming up in 3 weeks in prison without a trial. I've been incarcerated for 1,160 days without a trial.
What did they say that you did? For people who are not familiar with your story, what's the big offense that would lead you to be in prison so long?
Well, I'm a January 6th patriot. I showed up at the Capitol to stand against a stolen election, to peacefully protest, and there I witnessed the murder of Roseanne Boylan. I tried to save other people's lives that have stood up and done court sworn affidavits saying I saved their life. And I defended, you know, the innocent women and elderly people around me from Capitol Police brutality. And for all of those, I guess, egregious offenses, which I think, you know, 50 years in America, 50 years ago would be considered, you know, something like what a patriot's supposed to do. But nowadays, I guess we're domestic terrorists for wanting to make sure our elections aren't stolen.
You know, I haven't talked to anybody about Roseanne Boylan. We followed her because she's so forgotten. What did you see, Jake? What happened?
So on January 6th at about 4 p.m. in the afternoon, I was already in the middle of like an hour and a half long, basically just hand-to-hand defensive stand with the Capitol Police. We were inside that tunnel being crushed to death. The Capitol Police wouldn't give us any ground. They were using all these weapons they had against us, batons, riot shields, chemical weapons like CS gas and pepper spray and concussion grenades and rubber ball bullets and pepper ball bullets. I mean, they had a large arsenal. And we were just a bunch of unarmed people just peacefully protesting, and we got incited to defend ourselves. And at that time, Roseanne Boylan entered into the tunnel. She was ambushed while she was in the tunnel. She had no idea what kind of deadly force was being used inside that tunnel. I was nearly killed multiple times inside that tunnel. And she succumbed. She basically got hit. Apparently, Joe Hannanin at the Epic Times says that she got hit with a rubber pepper ball bullet, which exploded on impact in her chest. And basically, it knocked her down in an enclosed area. And after that, the Capitol Police did this maneuver, so deadly. And so, I mean, if you watch it from the Capitol Police body camera perspective, it's like this baton death march, literally, where they pushed people outside of the tunnel and they fell on top of one another. They were stacked 3, 4, 5 bodies deep in like a human swimming pool. And Roseanne, unfortunately, was at the bottom of that horrible human stampede. And she was, you know, she basically died from a mixture of trampling, you know, just blunt force trauma. She was being hit with batons by the police while she was on the ground, and chemical asphyxiation. She definitely couldn't breathe while I was trying to save her. So I was in a position, I scrambled out of that dog pile and I went back to try to pick people up. And I was in a position where I was able to get my hands on her, and I'm yanking and yanking on her, trying to stand her up. But the police just keep on pummeling more people on top of her. And God forbid, he called her home that moment, and she was no longer able to be saved. She was sopping wet in pepper spray and CS gas, and she was gone. And I had to move my attention over to people who were more in a better position to be saved. It's just, I get very emotional talking about this. It's hard to, you know, these are human lives we're talking about, great patriots that gave their whole life. Ashley Babbitt, Roseanne Boylan, Kevin Greeson, Benjamin Phillips, the four brave patriots that died on the steps of the Capitol defending our country. And she lost her life needlessly to a police riot that the Capitol Police were uncontrollable.
January 6th, yes or no, was a setup?
I have my own thoughts on that. Yes, is the quickest answer. But it was also the imagery and the messaging that we sent out to the rest of the world, to the deep state, to those who would like to usurp this country and take our constitutional republic away from us. It was a message to them that American patriots aren't willing to back down. And we will stand up if necessary. So, yes, it was orchestrated an event in many ways, but there was also the spirit of 1776 there that I don't ever like to downplay, because I think historically January 6th will go down as a revolutionary event that was historic in the nature that unarmed American patriots stood up against a stolen election and a communist coup d'etat that was happening inside the Capitol. And it won't be remembered as some type of, you know, Antifa incited event, or you know, the feds working through the crowd to incite it, which are true. But the more important thing is that American patriots still have a backbone and will stand up if necessary.
Tell me what it's like, how you've been treated.
The treatment has been so varied. I've been incarcerated, like I said, for 3 years and going on 3 months now. For the first 16 months of my incarceration, me and the January Sixers, we lived through hell together as a brotherhood. We were in solitary confinement because of under the auspices of COVID. And we did 23 hours a day in a cell. We weren't allowed to have visits from family members. We weren't allowed to have haircuts or shaves. We weren't allowed to go outside and get direct sunlight, no religious services, no access to our attorneys or to the evidence that they're claiming against us. It was the most un-American, despotic treatment that you wouldn't even expect to receive if you were, you know, El Chapo or the World Trade Center bombers or something like that. This was treatment that goes so beyond the normal realm of, you know, human decency. And this was basically orchestrated against us by the Biden DOJ to try to get hundreds of us to cave into plea deals. It was coercement, torture. And basically they said, if you turn on Trump right now, if you are willing to sign this plea deal right now and turn on Trump, you will be released from these horrible conditions of confinement, and you will get a great hand slap or soft sentencing or whatever. And so the conditions have varied, but we are political prisoners that have been tortured. Things have gotten better at times, but Wendy, I've done over 2 years of solitary confinement. They moved me around the country and put me in solitary confinement cells all the time. And it's just a blessing by God I'm able to speak to you today through the prison phone here in Brooklyn, New York. You know, I don't know at any moment they could cut me off.
What don't we know that you want us to know?
Well, there's so much surrounding January 6th that I don't even know yet, because I haven't been afforded the right to review my exculpatory evidence. The Republicans in Congress have been dragging their feet for 3 years, promising to release footage, promising to have a legitimate January 6th select committee that's a fact-finding investigation that gets down to the nitty-gritty of which players in the Democrat Party and the oligarchy in Washington, D.C. really had their hands deep inside January 6th, making sure this protest turned into the infamous storming of the Capitol. And I'd like to know what you guys want to know as well, too. Who had the most to gain, where the emails are that are orchestrating this, and all of the different, federal assets that were in the crowd, who's paying them, what their direct orders were, and, you know, why anybody would ever follow such unconstitutional orders that obviously create a situation in America that the government is going to turn on its people. Those FBI agents, those CIA, Department of Homeland Security, whoever they are, you guys are, you know, you're traitors, and you better come forward and whistleblow now, because, if not, you will be held extremely accountable. You'll still be held accountable, but there will be extreme consequences when the truth comes out of this, this horrible act that you guys plotted against the American people through usurpation and deception.
What's your view on Donald Trump? What has he done? Has he helped you?
Donald Trump, yeah, I mean, yesterday he tweeted out or whatever, my girlfriend told me, he truth social that the first three acts he's going to be doing on January 20th, 2025 as president will be to close the border, drill baby drill, and free the Jan 6 political prisoners. That's the first real messaging that is immediately concrete that I've seen out of him for 1,160 days. Better late than never. God bless him for that. That's very strong leadership. We definitely support Donald Trump as a whole in the January 6th community. I'd like to see even more from Donald Trump as far as akin to what maybe somebody like Martin Luther King would be doing in this situation, where maybe 100,000 person rallies
marching down the streets of Washington, D.C. with our family members, hand in hand with those who lost their lives, the family members, and, you know, chanting, "We shall overcome," and, you know, "Free the Jan 6 prisoners." That could have been done for the last 3 years. That would have been really amazing to see that movement, because for the most part, it's just been everyday American citizens from, you know, the Midwest who have been financially supporting us, making sure we have commissary, making sure we have money to call home and stuff like that. We haven't had support from obviously any Republican establishment or any real top level leaders, political leaders in this country. So for right now, it's been an entire grassroots movement, financially, spiritually, socially, in every way. It's been, you know, a fight of we the people. And I like it that way, to be quite honest. And it's good to see Donald Trump is now firmly stating his positioning on us. But like I said, history could have beckoned more from the great man that we all know and love, to be out there outside the prison with Ashley Babbitt's mom, you know, and sitting there in prayer with us and stuff. I mean, there's so much more that not just Donald Trump could have done, but let's say any member of Congress showing up outside the jail for a weekly, you know, weekly vigil. And, you know, this is the juxtaposition. What would AOC, Ilhan Omar, or any of these other squad members or radical leftists be doing if Black Lives Matter supporters were locked up for 3+ years without a trial? They'd be holding rallies and fundraising events and the whole nine yards 24/7.
I don't disagree with you. Would you be able to come back on and continue talking some other time?
Of course.
I would love that. I appreciate you, and you're not forgotten. Just so you know, we have not forgotten about you, and we will not forget about any of you. Jake Lang, I want to thank you for your time. I know it's brief, but we'll do it again. Okay.
Of course. Thank you so much, Wendy. If you guys want to support the Jan 6ers, guys out there, go to sponsorj6.com. Become a monthly commissary sponsor. Helps out so much. Wendy Bell, God bless you.
Thank you, sir. Take care, Jake.
Whew. Quick timeout. Lib of the week next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. Well, you know, we thank you so much for hanging with us during that interview, for listening, for hearing the stories that we think are worthwhile. We hope that it's informative and it's fun. And I know there's anger, and I would be lying to you if I told you that that interview didn't just kill me, because you don't want to think that these things are possible in a place that you love, in a place that you would die for. And the speed with which things changed after Donald Trump left office. And I can only feel as though he just interrupted the plan for 4 years. And the minute he left office, everything went downhill, as according to plan. And it is hurtful. It is infuriating. And I'm often angry. And so if you feel that way too, I get it. And that just drives our resolve to raise the best kids we have, or we can, do the best we can, and to try to not become too jaded to the point where we give up, because that's not an option. Mercifully, we have saved a special slice of crazy for you. You know how it goes.
Time now for the Wendy Bell Radio Program's
love me, love me, I'm a liberal.
Liberal of the Week.
This is a special slice of magic, ladies and gentlemen. This woman is really ticked off in 2024, 4 years after the pandemic, that people in her life are not still masking. Oh, yes.
A few weeks ago, I found out that the person that I love most in this world is no longer masking. Their entire family, including four small children, have stopped masking. And yesterday I texted her and I said, hey, I can't get past the fact that you all are no longer masking. Like, with everything that's happening in the world right now, with COVID, with RSV, with measles, with everything that's coming back,
what?
Not masking is wild behavior to me. Like, community care is important to me. I need to know that the people in my life care about their health and the health of the people around them. To which I received a 3.5-page dissertation justifying their behavior, including classics such as, we're not breaking any rules. We're doing way better than everyone else around us. We don't go anywhere if we feel sick. My personal favorite was paraphrased, you couldn't possibly understand because you don't have kids. It's illogical to expect children to continue masking and stay in lockdown. So I responded and I said, you know, as I already stated, it's your choice to make. I'm sure you will do everything you can to keep your family safe. The best thing for me right now is to take a step away from this relationship. I love you all, but I have to take care of myself first and foremost. Absolutely. I hope you understand. And she said, sure, I can't force you to stay.
Oh.
And I'm telling you this because I know I'm not the only one out here who is dealing with, struggling with people in their lives that they care about very much, that are no longer taking mitigation efforts. I can't have people in my life that make me feel unsafe. And they live on the other coast. But that's not the point. The point is, if I had the option to be around them right now, I couldn't because I wouldn't feel safe.
Oh, my God.
And that means something to me.
I don't even live by them. They live on the other coast. But I can't do it anymore. I can't do it. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a disease. There is a diagnosis. It's called freak. Thanks so much for being here. I love you guys. We'll see you tomorrow. Peace.